views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from L.A., coming to you live from FEMA Region number 6. Today is October the 11th, 2017. We have a live show for you today. Looking forward to getting into the show. And if you'd like to get into, give us a call at any time. Today is a Wise Wednesday. Brother Davis is already queued up, ready to go. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. Hit star. We'll see you in queue, and definitely we'll bring you up. And looking forward to the show. Yesterday we weren't able to have the show. That's going to happen from time to time because of just family obligations and things come up. So sometimes that is going to happen. So, but we're here, Black, live on air with you all, and looking forward to that. Okay, so. Everyone, please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. You can do that by going to the website for Black Talk Radio Network and hit the donation prompt. Also, you can support the network by going to being a member with BTR Community. BTR Community is a Black Talk Radio Community. BTR Community, Black Talk Radio Community, is a social media outlet network that's been put together by the network in order for you to engage in your social media activities without being adversely affected as much, without the data mining and the adversities that go along with it all. So definitely do be a part of that. For only $24 a year is a membership, and that will support the network, that will support the BTR community, and it's the only place where I actually post information, and I think it's very, 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 very important that we do that. Also, if you would like to acquire real money, just definitely go to Prosperity Mint, ProsperityMint, and check out what's there, and then email info@prosperitymint.com. If you have any questions or concerns, I know there was a person that had a question. That individual, definitely email, or you could text me directly or call me, 951-790-8330, and probably it will be better to text. There's some things that's going on with the website, some updates and everything else, and so there was a couple of issues, so definitely please contact that way. info@prosperitymint.com. The individual that sent me a message, I actually sent you an email back and gave you my number for you to give me a call, so definitely please do that. Also, if you would like to trade the cryptocurrencies with us, you can do that by going to our crypto, in the site is rcryptocurrency.com, check out what's there, and then you can join. And once you do that, you will be able to, you will be able to engage in the overall cryptocurrencies doing really well. And if you have any questions about that, you could text me 951-790-8330. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to talk to you all about the opportunity that I presented to you all on Saturday. It wasn't to everyone, so I want to give a presentation here, then get out to Brother Davis just to give you an update, and then we'll jump right into Wise Wednesday. Okay, so there's an opportunity via crowdfunding that I will be engaging in, and there's, you know, some people, and there's two ways in which you can do it, and no, it's not a Ponzi or is not a pyramid, because it's crowdfunding. Actually, that was put into law where the common people can, it was actually celebrity figurehead Obama has signed into law where everyday people can engage in crowdfunding campaigns for whatever their group or people or whatever their mission will be, and they can and actually do group funding.
Hey, Dave.
Crowdfunding campaign.
Dave, sorry to interrupt you. I'm glad to hear somebody's taking advantage of that new rule, because I did a number of interviews with this brother out of L.A. I'm sorry, I talked to so many people if I don't remember their names again right off, but I've talked
I talked to him.
I did interviews with him several times, and he was the first person to alert me to this new crowdfunding rule. So let me explain it this way. Not saying that you're not doing a good job of explaining it, but let me explain it the way he explained it.
No problem.
And the way he explained it was, now, we crowdfunding platforms have been around for a very long time. You know, some of the names are escaping me right now, but we know about those GoFundMe and others where you could donate to whatever cause or whatever it is that people are asking money for, and you might get a T-shirt in exchange for your donation or some other gift that they're offering.
Indiegogo.
Yeah, Indiegogo is another one. But the way he explained it, though, is that this is actually Wall Street investing. This is investing in a company using crowdfunding methods. And the rules were changed by the Obama administration to allow you to raise investment capital through crowdfunding portals. So I hope I did a good job in explaining that.
Yes, absolutely, Scotty. Yes, and it was Obama said that. Well, and the reason why he did it was he said, "Hey, because remember, that's really how he actually became the celebrity figurehead president was through that type of programs." So what he did was he said, "Well, the general population should be able to engage in this type of opportunity, like corporations have been able to do." So they made it to where crowdfunding was now legal. So now, as long as it's a crowdfunding campaign, you're fine and you're good to go. So it's not a pyramid. It is actually a crowdfunding campaign. And this crowdfunding campaign that I'm bringing to you all, I will actually be signing Scotty up, and I will actually Scotty doesn't have a choice. I'm gonna pay for it. There's two ways to do it for Scotty. There's a $50 entry, and then there's a Bitcoin entry. The Bitcoin entry is going to have more leverage in it, because Bitcoin is, you know, the price of Bitcoin, it fluctuates with the price of Bitcoin. But there's also a way that you can engage in this crowdfunding with $50. We gave the actual opportunity to you all. I sent a group text out this last weekend on Saturday. Many people didn't know it was me. I now know how to group text it so that you'll know it's me. And I will be sending out a group text. If you were on that call, we'll have another call Friday evening or Saturday, early Saturday morning, again, about the further details. And it's moving along. Just some minor things have to be dealt with. And that's why tomorrow's show, I'm going to have to record it early, and it won't be live, and probably Friday as well, because I have to go to some meetings just to make sure everything gets done correctly. And it's a great opportunity. And this opportunity is a crowdfunding opportunity where you can get in for $50. And I'm going to give you some of the benefits of it. And so you will be able to use your debit or credit card, or you will be able to use your Bitcoin. And as if you have, for those of you that have Bitcoins, and this is an amazing, amazing opportunity. So I wanted to bring it to you all, and it's great. Now, how it will work. This is this crowdfunding campaign is where all donations go to all of the members. So the lion's share of the donations go to the members, meaning the entry point of $50 to get in, and that's only the cash that you'll ever spend, need to spend, is $50 in the initial. So that will be the first and the last time. There's no hidden fees. There's no monthly fees. There's no mandatory recruitment. There is, and you get the you receive immediate return value, and this is all donations will go to the members. So you'll be a member of this if you would like to engage in it. And so how it will work? So you'll make a one-time contribution of $50. $40 goes into paying out to the members. $10 goes into maintaining the overall crowdfunding campaign and everything that goes along with it, the website that will be there. So that's what that initial fee will go to. And so how it will work, you can actually, if you know people that are struggling or having a hard time economically, or you just want to give a good gesture to someone, you can actually pay for them. You can give $50 for them, sign them up, and it's three people. Every person can only have three people underneath them. I will only be able to have three people underneath me, and it's a force matrix, meaning a force matrix means this, is that you can only have a certain number of people. It's been determined that it's three people that everyone will be able to have. And then, like me, I will continue to sign people up, and it will actually push all of the people that I signed up down into those that don't have anyone. Okay, so everyone will be able to have the ability to have someone. There's no requirement to recruit, but because of how good this program will be, you will be most likely you will be telling people about it because of the benefits that you'll be receiving. So case in point, sign someone up, and I would say when someone signs you up, that you didn't have to give some of your what you call Sabrina? Did you call her back? Yes, right now. Yes, sorry about that. I get on air and my phone continues to blow up. Sorry about that, everyone. So what happens is this. I want to hurry up so we can get to Brother Davis in the show. What happens is this, is that you sign someone up, and if someone signs you up and they pay your fee of $50, which is probably the best thing to do, once you start seeing the benefit of this, you sign someone else up, you pay for them, and just ask them to do the exact same thing, okay? This is where we really should be working together. It's an opportunity for us to have collective prudence. Okay, so now, sign someone up. And there's three people underneath you, and let's say there was a $50 contribution that you made. So you would receive $40 from three people, the three people underneath you, and that would put you at a level one, and you would receive $120. So that $120, you can leave the program, take it with you. It's yours, but I would suggest that you stay in. And what happens if you stay in, you just take out $40 and keep the $80 in. It will push you into a level two. And then after you get nine people, well, you don't have to sign up anymore, but nine people will sign up under you because of the three people that you gave in. So after that nine people, you'll receive $70 from nine people, for a total of $630. Okay, then that will push you into the next level, level three. In level three, It just requires that you contribute $280, which none of it you've any paid in. It's actually from your residual from your $630. So you would keep in $280, take out the difference between $630 and $280, and that would be yours to do whatever you would like to do with it. Then you would receive $250 from 27 people, and that would give you $6,750. Also, once there, you would receive that $6,700. The next stage would only require that you keep in $1,000. You could take out $5,750 for whatever you would like to do. And then you would have 81 people underneath you, and you will receive $900 from 81 people, which would equal $72,900. And from that $72,900, to push you into the next level, all you would have to leave in is $5,400, and the remainder of the $67,000, you can do whatever it is that you would like to do. And then that would put you in where you would have 243 people under you, and they'll pay into you $4,900 of 243 people would add up to $1,100,000. It's really $1,120,000 or somewhere around there would be it. So the one of the things that's will be required and asked of you is to establish some humanitarian cause. There will be humanitarian causes that we will have built into this that you can participate in or go in at your own. You will only be able to go up to the fifth stage, and that would be if you had the cash infusion, and that would be for $1,119,000. Would be it. After that, that would be the highest that you would be able to go. And at the whole during the whole time, I would suggest that you continue to sign people up, because then it will just continue to filter down for everyone, and it is definitely enough for everyone. So this is the program with cash. There is even a better one, or a one for those of you that are have Bitcoin, and you'll be able to use a Bitcoin, and the leverage on that is actually, is really, really crazy, crazy sick. I will go over all of this, and there are some things that you all would need to do to get ready for this opportunity, and it's going to be launching very, very soon, and I would like for you to get in at the very beginning and help as many people, help yourselves, and help as many people with this. And with the cash infusion, your only cash infusion that you would put into this whole program is $50. It will not require that you put anything more into it, but for some of the profit or some of the which you would receive from it, for you to continue to grow it, they would ask that you would keep some of that in, and that would make you eligible to go to the next stage and to gain even more. So that's the program. I'm very, very excited about it. I've been working with some people to get it and to help out with it. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. And it does have a cryptocurrency side and Bitcoin that is absolutely sick. I will explain that. And there are some things that you need to do. We will have a conference call we will do it, because I was going to do it this evening. But let me see. I won't be able to do it this evening because after Tando Radio Show, some things that I have to do. But we will do it definitely on Friday and on Saturday. No, everyone that's here, if you would like to engage in it, definitely email me at wolf6pack1@gmail.com or text me at 951-790-8330, and I will make sure that once – to put you in on the conference call on how to get your cryptocurrency wallet together and to get you ready for this position, because getting the cryptocurrencies sometimes takes a time. There's some accounts that you need to open up. All the accounts are free, but the overall process, the compliance process, it could be very, very long. And now that Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies have started going up, they take it as a first come, first serve basis, and they push everyone back. So that is what I wanted to say to you all. It's going to be happening very, very soon. Now, for some of you late owls, if you're a super late owl, I will have a conference call for a super late one tonight, right around 10:30 Central Standard Time. Let me make sure that's right. Well, no, that's not right. It's going to be 9:30. No, let's do 10 o'clock. Sorry, just looking at my schedule. 10 o'clock Central Standard Time. So you have to correlate your time to Central Standard Time. Eastern Time, that would be 11 o'clock. So 10 o'clock this evening, if you would like to be involved in a quick conference call about it, then definitely text me, 951-790-8330. Please just text me, because I'm going to be Brother Davis, I'll be listening to Brother Davis' show, but I will also be on the line trying to help out some things, and I won't be able to take phone calls. But text me, 951-790-8330, or you can email me at Wolf, W-L-O-F, the number 6, then P-A-C-K, the number 1, at gmail.com. So that is some of the updates, and things are getting moving right along. Would love for you all to participate in. It's a great, great opportunity. And without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Brother Davis and for Wise Wednesday, and then we will go from there. And if you would like to, I will be back and forth. If you would like to have a question or comment for Brother Davis, give him a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. Then hit **, and just say, excuse me, and then you'll be able to talk to Brother Davis. So with that being said, Brother Davis, the show is all yours. Thank you so much.
Always good to hear the voice of a friend. Always good.
Yes, it is, Brother Davis. Yes, it is.
I tell you, sometimes when I listen to the show, I realize how blessed I am to be a part of an organization that's not only opening doors, but it's going to turn me into a blessing for others. Well, welcome to Wise Wednesday.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you, I've had a thrilling, powerful week. I had taken some time off and down on the farm. Was excellent, and literally I put some time in training the dog, did very well. I cut some of the land, some of the the foliage and that sort of thing, and cutting back, preparing for the off season. And we're looking at the growth of the kale and the greens and everything I'm doing, my brothers and sisters, you can do yourself. I'm going to keep reiterating that, because I'm working on a program with my older brother in which we can come together and discuss the investment of how you can go ahead for a few dollars and transform not only your physical life, you can transform your pocketbook by saving $500 or $600 a year, as well as you can be able to eat food from that you've known had a personal relationship from seed to harvest and then to cooking process. And that's a powerful, if you think about that, that's a powerful understanding, because see, now you know exactly what you're eating and where it came from. And you know the process. You can discuss how you literally set it up as seedlings, and you put your seed in the soil. And we use one of those dry cartons of eggs. You use one of those, and you leave a half an egg in the bottom, put a little soil over top of it, drop a seed in there, put a little soil on it, and that's called building seedling. It's that simple. But, I mean, that's just part of the learning process. And the reason why I'm trying to bring this to you is that I really want you to understand the importance of being able to transform your living environment into what is called a pharmacultural environment. A pharmacultural environment is that you're growing the things that you can eat, but saves you money in the long run, and the knowledge that you get, it's phenomenal, because it makes no difference what environment you are in. You can utilize that knowledge to parlay it to more money into your pocket. And if you want to, you can sell your produce too, because you can produce that much. And a lot of people fail to realize what a small garden in your backyard produces. And I mean, give you a perfect example. Erica's father has a small garden. He does it. He produces at least 500 or 600 tomatoes, beautiful tomatoes every year. Cucumbers, radishes. I mean, he's doing some things. He's giving a lot of it away. He's 87 years old, and he's eating a lot of it and giving a lot of it away. But it's a lot of personal joy to him. And that's what I really want to open the door to, our understanding of our personal joys. You see, we have been taught to follow the dollar. Why? Because the dollar was leveraged in everything we did. If we wanted to pay bills at work, you need to buy something at work. But literally, the dollar is a false material. It's a false material because you had to go out and make some sort of sacrifice to get that dollar. And a lot of times, there are people making sacrifices to get that dollar. They're making sacrifices they really don't want to make. But they're in no position to leverage how they feel against what they need. And we're going to empower you to be able to do that. That's what Black Talk Radio is about. All of the shows here are about empowering you to do a little bit something different to add to the abundance of your knowledge and hopefully your profitable bottom line. And we're moving into an era now in which money is becoming abundant, but the cost is going up. And why do I say money is becoming abundant? Because as we move into the next year, there's going to be a lot of dollars returning back to the United States. A whole lot of dollars. And guess what? You're not going to take them out of the system right away, because they have to have viability in the system for it to continue to function. And Dave's been talking to you about some of these things. But remember now, that is fiat money. So if you do have the ability to change that fiat money into real money, like precious metals or whatever, do so now. Because in reality, that's your bank. Me and my wife, we don't leave any more in the bank than we have in bills. Why? Because if something happens, we want our resources with us. We don't want to go to somebody else and put a card in machine, and they say, well, you know what? You do have it here, but you can't get it now. And that's what it's going to come to. But just think, if you have a garden in your backyard or on your patio, you won't have to worry about going hungry. And sometimes that is a deal breaker itself. Because you know how people are when they go to the grocery store? Do you realize 80% of the people who go to the grocery store don't even take a grocery list? Oh, I know what I want. I know what I want. And then you go buy some. Most people buy the stuff that they really don't want, but they eye caught their attention. The red, yellows, and these are colors that literally they know puts you in a comfortable mood to purchase. It's like putting a lubricant on your pocket so that your dollars could just slide out. And they design stores like that. You know, if you've been in a grocery store, you've seen a lot of yellows, a lot of reds, a lot of whites, a lot of harmonious greens, reds, and yellows. They know that's relaxing to you. Everything that the system does, the system is doing because of a design that says this works. So therefore, when you go there, you're not thinking that you're becoming a part of a already learned process. I went to a grocery store the other day, and they got these new machines now that you can go in and register your bank card and then go shopping, wand everything that's in your cart, put the wand down at the end by just going, hitting cash out, bagging your stuff and walking out the door. They're making it as convenient as possible because that's the lubricant. That's the lubricant to get it out your pocket. And, you know, a lot of us, we fail to realize the importance of the information that we carry. What do I mean? When we see things like, if you have joined this here preferred customers club, ask yourself this, how many preferred customers club cards do you have? Because every time you do a preferred customers card, you're giving them some information that you may prefer not to. But it's required if you want the car. See how they do that? They know how the system is designed. It just needs you to fall in line with the system expectation. Because there is an expectation of the system working, whether you're aware of it or not. And one of the most unique things about that is that when it is working, a lot of times we don't even think about it. We do it out of habit. Another program that has been placed in us through one of our habits, whether it's listening to the TV, the radio, or freely flowing. You know how freely flowing is. You're on Facebook and it says, oh, there's somebody says, this app is great. It works for me real well. There you know. They put that information out there to get that app. You see, they understand the system. It's designed to make you feel like you're in control when you are not. So we're talking about taking back control.
Hey, Brother Davis.
Let me tell you about my... Yes, Brother Scotty, come on.
Hey, they spend billions of dollars, the advertisement industry and these corporations, to do exactly what you're talking about, is to come up with methods to make you buy something. And I don't know if this is a term that's out there. Maybe I'm coining a term, but I call what you just described as passive mind control. Passive mind control. When we think mind control, most of the times we thinking, oh, the CIA then gave somebody some drugs and put them under hypnosis and implanted these trigger words in their minds and stuff like that. But don't think that's an extreme example. There are little small examples like Brother Davis just gave you about colors, even music. He mentioned this little card. They also made it easier for you to use your smartphone. Mostly everybody got smartphones. You just swipe your pet, you put your little smartphone up to it. But I call that passive mind control. I'm trying to remember an article I just read the other day about one of those passive mind control methods, and they're admitting to it publicly. And so you're exactly right about how they do come up with concepts and then implement these concepts into real world models that I call passive mind control.
Right, my brother. Thank you very much for that confirmation, because literally all of us have a story of confirmation, because we are in the system. It's designed to keep us in the system. And you know what's interesting? Now, as I'm beginning to make this evolution with my family, I'm beginning to really see how easy it is to literally fall off the grid. And now, when I say fall off the grid, I mean not be attached to the services, not be attached to the electric, and not be attached to the sewage system, because in rural living, that's a part of that lifestyle. And see, as I'm beginning to disconnect from these other things, and I'm looking at other options, and there are plenty of them. My brother and I were discussing the fact that the living situation that we're creating is basically electric. So we were looking at tying ourselves into the electrical grid, because initially we wanted to set up so that we're going into the winter months so we don't have any shortcomings of heat and that sort of thing. But in doing our research, there's already the solar equipment that is available to us to harness that and cut ourselves totally off the system. Now, that was an enlightening idea to me. Why? I already knew about off-grid living, but I didn't realize the simplicity that was involved. And you see, a lot of times, they want to make things look hard. Perfect example is the carcinogenic engine and industry, energy industry. And that's all the energy industries that leave some sort of toxin in the atmosphere by the use of their energy source. Okay? All of these industries know of the power of the solar industry. They know of the power of the hydro industry. Hydro meaning wind farms and that sort of thing. Because they're making profits off of it, but they're not making profits off of it in your face. So a lot of municipalities now are starting to incorporate these energy resources into their metropolises. That way they can save some money and they can make some money, and they're looking at long-term usage. So literally, we're seeing this from a distance, but because it isn't active as it is in the rural areas, more active in the rural areas than it is in the city, we don't see it as much as in our paper. But in reality, it's available. And people that are moving to the rural areas, a lot of them now, they are incorporating these technologies in their way of life. Why? Because, one, it doesn't leave any carcinogenics. Two, they have total autonomy. And three, in many cases, they can sell the excess back to either the companies, the electrical companies, or they could sell them to they could store them until they need them. Now, there's probably a residual of waste that comes in, because when you're generating more than you need and you don't have an outlet to sell it, you're probably going to have to use a certain degree of runoff, but that's fine, because you're living in a state that you never lived in before, and that is the state of self-sufficiency. This is what we're trying to move to, my brothers and sisters. We're trying to make it so that we are so self-sufficient that only thing we decide that we need is when we reach out to it. It doesn't put its hand on us. You see, the system right now, it has its hand all over us. Why? Because it can. We've already been into the institutionalization of the industrialized cities. But these things are changing. And the reason why they're changing, it may not always be because of our doing. But if we do it, we have control over it. And the reason why I say if we do it, we have control over it, because my family and I, when we purchased our land and we decided to move out here, and all of a sudden we had to go to other sources to provide us with what we need. And guess what? They're out there. So I'm trying to open this door so you understand that just as anyone else can do it, so can you. Just as it can be a benefit to someone else, it can be a benefit to you. And my brothers and sisters, I want you to get on the phones. Because I was really going to start the show tonight and talk about the new, it's not new, it's a 1966 or 1960s executive order that's been reactivated, and has to do with the extremist black identity, which is crazy to me. But we'll do that the next half of the show. This part of the show, I want to really truly get into you understanding the importance of taking control of your life, you understanding the parameters that may be involved, but you also being able to achieve whatever is required because you're in a position that you can. Brothers and sisters, this is Brother Davis, and you know what? We're going to have a good time tonight, because I've come across a lot of things. Oh, another good thing about Apple this weekend, we looked in the harvest and the honey, and I'm going to tell you, them bees is happy. I got happy bees, y'all. The only thing that didn't work this weekend was the weather was damp. You see, when the weather's damp, the bees hang around the hive. And you see, we don't want the bees to hang around the hive when we harvest the honey. We want them to be out working so we can take a portion of the honey. And that way, when they come back, all they do is continue making honey. Because so you never take all of the honey out the hive. And we went out to the hive to check the bees. It was a dreary kind of day. You know, it wasn't raining, but it had been raining that night. And the bees were all stuck on the outside of the, I won't say stuck, but they were sticking to the outside of the hive. Now, I said, you know, I don't understand why they're doing that. And he was saying, well, they're trying to absorb the moisture off of the hive. I said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah, that's what they do, because it actually helps the hive dry out quicker, but it also determines their pecking order. I said, pecking order? He said, yeah. He said, because that's not only how they get the moisture, but those bees with the more authority, or they take a different position, and that position they take is according to the authority of the position they are in the hive. Nature is so, so magnificent. Even though the hummingbirds that we have communicate with the bees. This is really going to trip you out. My brother, he planted a lot of red clover. And I said, it looked like it was going very well. And I said, he said, yeah, what's one of the lures to the bees? And the bees love it and everything. And he said, the best part about it is that they communicate with the hummingbirds. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the hummingbirds will come in early in the morning. and they would tap the clover for nectar. But they're constantly producing a nectar. And see, I didn't know that. He said, so by the afternoon, when the bees are out in the warmth of the day, there's more nectar in there that the bees can get. I said, get out of here. He said, oh, yeah. He said, there's a balance and harmony in nature that we only detect when we take a part of operating in collusion with nature. And here's the best part. When we put water out, sugar water, it attracts these hummingbirds. They come out of nowhere. I took pictures. I'm going to tell you, I was excited. I had an excellent time. And the reason why I'm telling you all of these things is because there's so much growing that we have yet to do in this world, because literally we have not been exposed to it. We have been exposed to the destruction and the devastation of waste that Westernism teaches. And Westernism knows about this thing. Oh, make no mistake. But they don't openly teach it for one reason. They don't want you to return there. They don't want you to know that the honey that you harvest or the food that you grow is better for you than they can provide. Because they already have a plan for your life. They don't want you to have an alternative or you to have the innate ability to go out and create an alternative. That means you're outside the system to them, and they don't want you outside the system. But my brothers and sisters, there are so many things that are going on that are so good for us. But we have to open those doors in the midst of what is going on to examine how we can fit this in what we're doing. We have 200 bee shows coming up. It's end of season, that sort of thing. And there's a bee festival in Atlanta that's coming up in late November. And there's one coming up in Hartsville, South Carolina, which is relatively close to where we are, in October. So my brother designed a beehive. Took the original idea. He looked at all of the ins and outs, examined the plan and what it was designed to do, and he fine-tuned it. Well, he fine-tuned it, and he took a picture of it, and he planted it in just a local periodical on bees. But he got a call from this festival because he didn't know about it. And they asked him to be a part of the festival. Now, here's how they did it. They said, you know, we have this festival every year, and we don't know just how involved in the beekeeping that you are. But one of our major contributors seen the design of your hive, and he thought it would be good for us to contact you and invite you into the show. Now, how is that for power? And you understand, we're growing into an area that we have not always been a part of. And the reason why I point that out to you is because he doesn't have a background in bees. We don't have a background in beekeeping. What we do have is the incentive to change our lives. And in doing so, now he's been invited to one show. People came from Atlanta to see his hives, and they went and told him about the show in Atlanta, and now he's going to be in that show in Atlanta. And here's the catch. The people that we love by our nook, now your nook, let me explain to everybody. When you start a hive, you must buy a nook with a queen and worker bees. The smallest nook we can get was a queen and 50,000 bees. And that ran roughly about $100, $150. Okay? So what we did was we purchased that. We brought it out to the farm. We set it up. We introduced the bees to the hive. And we let nature take its course. Now, we had to put certain lures in, okay? One of the lures we put in was honey water, because bees consume sugar water. And they consume that sugar water, and they transform that sugar water into the essence of energy. And that was in the spring before all of the pollinating begun. My wife just pointed that out to me. And I'm glad she did, because, see, that shows you that there's a timeline involved in this process. and I'd like to say I'm up on it, but I'm growing in this. Now, we don't have to do the sugar water again, ever again, because now that the bees are producing honey, you see what I'm saying? The system has already came and brought itself to a balance. But in the beginning, we had to initiate the bees' natural process of what they do in a hive. So there had to be a source for food and energy, and that's what they get out of the sugar water. But now the balance is great. I'm going to tell you, the one hive is phenomenal. And it's the second hive is starting to expand. Now, what does that mean? That means that the community in the one hive is literally expanded into the second hive. Now, have they totally dominated it yet? No, they haven't. Possibility is that they will. So in doing so, that means that as another queen hatches in or comes in, because that's what the queens do, they have another queen, and as they bring that queen to fruition, she leaves that hive and she sets up her own hive. And then as she begins to set up her own hive, followers will go with her and they will help her do the immediate things that she will need to start laying eggs, and then they produce, and the cycle continues. This has been a growing experience for me. Yeah.
Brother Davis, I think you got a call. I'm not sure because I was out the room for a second there, but it looks like you have a call from 404. But there's a guy who keeps bees here. I don't know if he's still alive. I haven't seen him out there in a while, but I know those beehives are still out there, and he has a very small piece of property which is in Mount Holly city limits, but he has at least five hives in his back room, and they're only a few yards apart. So I just wanted to share that observation with you. Area code 404, did you have a question for Brother Davis on this Wise Wednesday?
Yes. Hi, Brother Scotty, this is Jada from Atlanta. Hi, Sister Davis, Brother Davis.
Hello, Sister. How are you?
I'm great. I have a question for you guys. The question is about hemp plastics. I stumbled upon it like maybe a week or two ago. And, you know, because of all the plastics that are not biodegradable, are you familiar with those hemp plastics?
I've heard of them, but I really don't have a personal experience, but anything that you can add would be a plus.
Oh, okay. Hemp plastics, you could basically use them for anything, bottling, water, and different things of that nature. And they can go into landfills, and they actually biodegrade. They actually dissolve. And it looks like after they biodegrade, it looks like either print paper, and they just go into the soil. It was amazing when I looked at it. So that's just also something to look into, because I am a recycling maniac, because I hate the fact that plastics are destroying the earth and they're not biodegradable. It takes them forever to biodegrade. So that may be something that you guys may want to look into, even if, you know, doing farming, or even we might want to get into dealing with plants and stuff like that. Instead of us using regular plastics and things of that nature, we could use hemp plastics.
You're absolutely right. So, you know, I'm not really sure if it's the same kind of plastic, but they're gathering plastics out of the oceans now, and they're recycling them in some sort of reusable substance. I'm not really sure what it is, but it'd be worth looking into, because anything that's going to help us clean up the planet, we need to be incorporating into our daily lives. And that, did you say that was hemp plastic or hemp plastic?
Hemp, H-E-M-P, you know, from the hemp plant. So, yeah, they actually
have. Excellent.
Yeah. So you could just Google it, and it'll pop up. Cannabis. It was pretty amazing when I stumbled on it. I was like, wow, okay, cool.
Hemp is in the cannabis family. Weed. Hemp
is.
I said hemp is in the cannabis family.
Yes, thank you.
I was going to say, now that you mentioned it, my wife and I went to the Pennsylvania Farm Show last year or so, and they were featuring a hemp demonstration, because literally hemp is being one of the products that is actually being Well, for those of you who haven't put two and two together, hemp is a form of marijuana. But with the passing of the marijuana laws, the manufacturers are looking at the different attributes that hemp brings. And I didn't realize it. But you know what? Just now, as you mentioned it, I do remember the plastic there. They also make bricks out of it. Bricks.
Wow.
And they make rope and clothing. They have some nice pullover blouses there that they made with it. I mean, it's very interesting. But now, a lot of people don't want to say this because you have to understand they vilified hemp for a purpose. But the reason why they vilified it is because it has so many uses. And it can be done. You can even make fuel out of hemp. Does anyone want to add to that? Well, you can make rope, fuel, clothing. I mean, there's just so many things that you can do with it. And as we begin to expand that market, you see...
Yes, Brother Davis, yes. You can make biofuel from it. I'm sorry, Sister Jade, I had muted you because we were getting a lot of noise off your line. But if you wanted to...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. But yes, at one time in the early colonial period, it was by law, they legislated that you had to grow hemp because of its paint, varnish, you mentioned biofuels, paper, you know, politically, economically, the guy, Patty Hearst's dad, that owned the newspaper, giant Hearst company and whatnot, and he had a bunch of tree farms, and he also, you know, helped pass legislation or lobby for legislation to criminalize cannabis because it can compete with paper companies, in which he had paper companies, and which were also supplying his newspaper. So, but the main reason that they criminalized it is to put nine white people back into slavery.
You're absolutely right, Scotty. But you know what? And now that these doors are opening, all of these products are starting to surface again. All of the versatility of the hemp plant itself is starting to come to the forefront and show how they can serve the United States in a different manner. And it grows like bamboo. Now, for those people who don't know how bamboo grows, when bamboo grows, if the wind blows and the seeds blow off, wherever they land, they grow. And I mean, it can be a harvest of joy or it can be a treasury, because when I say it grows, my aunt had a beautiful home and she put bamboo on the backside. Well, in 2 years, it was on all three sides. In 3 years, it was in the front. Literally, she had to cut back. And here's the sad part. Cutting doesn't do it. You got to root it up and cut it out. But you can shape it. There's a lot of things you can do with it that are artful and beautiful, but you have to have that sort of time and that sort of know-how. Actually, it's kind of like the bonsai tree. You can literally tie a wire to make it grow in the curves and loops and everything. But like I said, you have to have that type of knowledge in order to apply it the way you want to. But it's definitely making a resurgence. And here's what gets me. If the United States doesn't jump on the forefront of this, where they could have with solar energy, and since they did in Germany now, I believe they're running roughly 60-85% totally off solar energy, which means that they're taking the lead in that sort of technology. If the United States would have took the lead in that technology back in 1973, when Jimmy Carter was in office, because Jimmy Carter, for those of you who don't know, he had solar panels on the White House. But as soon as Ronald Reagan came in, he represented a different entity of the elite, which were all based on carcinogenic energies, so they tore the solar panels down right away. So literally, we let many opportunities get away because of our greed for this American dollar has set the pace for quality of life in America. We could be the most powerful country in the world, introducing the world to a higher quality level of living through utilizing the natural resources of nature, incorporating hemp, incorporating solar power, reharnessing the turbines in other countries that Tesla literally brought electric to American cities here with. For those of you who don't know, Tesla designed a water turbine, which literally supplied electricity for all of America until the nuclear age. And literally, the nuclear age was a choice, because Tesla has, originally designed, a powerless energy system. And to this day, they say they haven't found a plan for that system. But you know what? That would have taken so much money out of these greedy people's pockets that they would not expose a system like that, even if they came across it, unless they were in a situation where there wasn't no option. But these things that we are beginning to... Yes, go ahead, sister.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Hello, Brother Davis. Just a quick question, because I definitely wanted to go back to what you were saying about trying to grow our own food so that way we know where it's coming from.
Yes.
Would you have like a suggestion on like how to get the seeds? Because that's one of my main concerns. I've heard that you could just get some fruit, like organic fruit from the grocery store, and then, you know, just dry those or do whatever you need to do with those and grow from there. Or would you suggest like buying packets of seeds, like either online or from like a hardware store or some store like that?
Well, let me tell you this here. You must do your due diligence. There are seed farms and seed festivals. I suggest to go to a seed festival if you're even in a major city. There's got to be one somewhere close. Contact the local forest, or even go into the 4-H clubs and that sort of thing, because they're familiar with these things. You want to get the highest quality natural seed. And the reason, my wife is saying heirloom, and the reason why is because heirloom has what they call a history, in which you don't want to get those GMO seeds that are out here that appear to be one thing that are another. And believe me, they're all over the place.
What she's looking for is, when you're ready to go to break. Sorry, Brother Braggs, I had to mute you. Heard the dogs in the background, and I'm sure Brother Davis, Team Davis dog, heard it, and she was barking back and what have you. So on the other side,
I apologize, y'all.
That's okay. But on the other side, we'll open back up the phone lines. But to our caller from 702, you want to look for heirloom seeds. Heirloom seeds, though, that's spelled H-E-I-R-L-O-O-M, heirloom seeds. You can find those if you do, like he said, if you have like those old time country hardware stores that also we call them feed stores around here. They will have those heirloom seeds, but you can get them online. But just do your due diligence on the company and make sure they ain't selling you some bootleg, you know, GMO seeds. But you can find that's what you're looking for. That's the terminology, is heirloom seeds. That's not correct, Brother Davis?
That is absolutely correct, Scotty. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, we're going to go to break, and then we come back. The phone lines are open on this Wise Wednesday with Brother Davis. You're listening to Tando Radio Show on the Black Talk Radio Network, broadcasting Monday through Fridays from 6 to 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be right back on the other side.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back, y'all. This is getting to be an exciting show. Anytime we're talking about doing things that's going to fortify our quality of life, expand our intelligence level, we're growing, and this is what this is all about, growing. Is there anyone else in queue with a question? Okay, let me pick up where the sister...
Brother Braggs, I had muted Brother Braggs, but Brother Braggs, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know if you knew that Ford had created a car made out of all hemp and also powered by hemp. The colonists here in America were required to grow hemp. It was the national crop. Benjamin Franklin and his buddies from the Hellfire Club smoked weed and had orgies all day. So if you dig down in history, you're going to find out hemp was the major crop of the United States. Now, one of the greatest opponents to this legalization of marijuana in our country. Part of it was the federal government, but you got alcohol, man, pharmaceutical, cigarette. These people are fighting the marijuana legalization hand and foot. That's been the people that's been holding in their check. Especially the thing he was saying about Mr. Hearst, who was one of part of the propaganda campaign to victimize or venomize marijuana and make it seem like, you know, that it was detrimental. But it had always been a major cash crop in this country. And that's all I wanted to say.
Excellent content.
Forgive me, I got dogs in here in my house, and they're bugging out around here. So please mute me quickly, because I got my dogs in heat. So forgive the noise. Forgive me.
Okay, listen, ladies and gentlemen, that was excellent content. He gave you a bit of the history. I wasn't going to go back that far, but that he's actually very right. One of the major crops in this country in the early American history was hemp. It literally was vilified out of existence to the degree where literally it became illegal. But that's in the realm of change right now. So I wanted to bring that out to you. And another thing is, I too, as a farmer in the South, I'm considering the opportunities that are going to be available if they decide that this becomes a marketable crop where I can find somebody who's going to take the product that I grow. Because in reality, I'm in this business to make money, and if that offers me an avenue to do so, I shall. Although we do organics, and I really enjoy that because I like eating what I grow, and I like to be able to help the system. Because the only way this is going to work, my brothers and sisters, if we all take and play a part of the transformation. So if my part of the transformation is to learning to grow organic vegetables, and someone else's part of the transformation may be growing medicinal herbs, another person's part may be teaching how to set up a pharmaculture in your backyard. I know those of you who don't know, Brother Dave has a nice pharmaculture in his backyard. But we have to grow to understand the importance of the knowledge so that when we do start opening that door, we can literally eat what we grow. It makes all of the difference in the world. Because guess what? A lot of times when you're getting up in the morning, maybe take that walk with that cup of coffee or do your exercises, you're looking out there, you can pick up your lunch, you can pick out your dinner, and start it in that process. Because I'm going to tell you something, that's what I did. Sunday morning when I went up, got up, stretched, walked around in the dew of the day, I went out and dug up some of those sweet potatoes. Oh, yeah. And I pulled them sweet potatoes. Now, my brother said, now, you know, they're supposed to, after you harvest them, they should sit for another 2 to 3 weeks so that the sugar and the sweetness can really build up. But I'm going to tell you something. When my wife made them, we only pulled two up. But when she made them sweet potatoes, they were mighty tasty. And you know what? I looked at my brother and I said, now, I know you're right, man, but these are mighty tasty. He said, oh, I didn't say they weren't sellable. I said, if you just want them to be at the peak of sweetness for a sweet potato, you need to put it in a situation where that sweet potato can benefit by the sugar that's being in that, so the, I'm going to say, hibernation period, where it's out of the ground, but not yet being processed. So there's more information I did not know before. And see, here's the best part. A lot of times, when we're out here doing the little things, we don't understand how we're adding to the harmony that literally allows the life to flow. We are in an ocean. This ocean is called the universe. And we play a magnificent role in this ocean. Whether it be on any level, mental, physical, or spiritual, we are a part on every level. And that's why, even though your thoughts, and I'm going to tell you, I do this a lot, I kind of hum and sing, well, even that adds to the quality of life that I lead. And I didn't really know a lot of these things, but as we begin to grow and we begin to incorporate a greater understanding of where we want to be or where we want to go, these become an attribute of trying to build that cosmological atmosphere, that bubble we want to be in there to survive in. I know how many people go out, and this is very interesting, I'll point it out there. when you go out in the morning, up in the Northeast, people very seldom speak. I'm telling you, I'm straight up. They very seldom speak. And if you're in the traffic, oh, man, they're relentless. And when I say they're relentless, I mean they don't give nobody no breaks. They don't get you play. They don't want you to move around. You try to switch lanes, they'll jump up and cut you off. Well, guess what? I live in the South. I walk down the street and people say, come on in. They don't have to know you to show you some love. And to me, that was phenomenal. And we live like this every day. But here's the best part. You begin to do it. You see, we take on the attributes of our environment that literally we enjoy. And I like that. And I don't know if you've ever experienced it. When you go down the South, that Southern hospitality, that comes out at you right away. Everybody that comes down the South, if we go anywhere, they say, you know, everybody speaks to you. But yeah, they do. But you, and I even, my grandchildren, when they first came down there, well, Pop-Pop, you know them? No. Oh, well, they, when they finally realized, oh, they speak to each other down. You have to understand the harmony that takes place in a child's mind when they begin to realize that in this environment, it's different from the environment they're from. And they look at things in the environment that they like, and you know what they say? Oh, Pop-Pop, you know, I like that. They'd be out with my wife and everything, and they talk about how people are more open to just general conversation. They're not talking about each other's business, or they're not trying to pry. They're just open to general conversation. So that's another lure that I found in the South that I really like, that's attractive to me. But when I was speaking about reference to us taking control of our lives and growing our own food and how we initiated this whole thing with the bees, the reason why I'm bringing these out to you is because these are the positive things in our present circumstance. We have a lot of things that are not positive. And those things that are not positive, in most cases, we give more weight to them because we look at them in comparison to where we are, what we're doing in our lives. What bills are due, what time I got to go to work, what's my schedule like? Because they work in harmony with their thought process. Well, my wife said to me, you know, you're so much more relaxed when you're home. And the reason why I'm so much more relaxed when I'm home is because I know everything there. I don't have to worry about the pressures. One of the things I noticed in the South, at night when you sit on your porch, all you hear is nature. Unless your neighbors are close, all you hear is nature. And most of the people that live down there aren't close enough so that they're sitting on their porch that you can hear each other. You know why? Because they got their own lives. And the best part about living your life down there is that you don't have to worry about them intruding on you or you intruding on them. Now, am I saying there's never no drama? No, I'm not. That's what I'm not saying. But I'm saying that there's a certain quality that we need in our lives that living in Westernism, it doesn't highlight. And the reason why it doesn't highlight it is because Westernism wants there to be confusion in your life. I mean, a lot of you might think that's kind of strange, but that's true. Westernism wants there to be confusion in your life because that way there's always an outlet for them to open the door. What is an outlet for them to open the door? Well, say you're riding down the street, minding your own business, and all of a sudden, there's a police light behind. It's an outlet for them to open the door. And in most cases, it's going to cost you something. But when you're used to living in those environments, you get used to paying it. It's like running to the corner store. You don't even realize how much money you might spend at the local corner store. But I have a friend, well, I live in Pennsylvania, and he had a corner store. And he said, you know what, in a four-block radius, there's about close to maybe 2,200 to 2,500 people living there. So if I get 1% of those people to come in here and spend at least $1 to $10, this would be a viable spot to be in. And I never really thought about it. But that is the numeric dynamic that he works from that insures him a profit.
Hey, Brother Davis.
Yes, Brother Scotty.
Are you not from the South?
No, I'm not from the South. I'm from Pennsylvania. But I'm from the South now.
Okay. Well, the reason I was asking is just be careful, and I'm talking about be careful of these Southern crackers. I just said it. Okay. Oh, yeah. Be careful of these Southern crackers, and they'll be nice and they'll be cordial, and not all of them are looking to practice racism against you, but you never know. You never know. Cause like that's I look right out the window today, and I've been noticing it more frequent since Trump being president, but I've only seen it 2 times thus far this year. But when I was coming up, it was nothing. They were wearing the Confederate flag on their shirt and whatnot. Back then, they were doing it because you had rock bands that were sporting that flag, you know? So I'll put that, you know, as those kids, again, that passive mind control. And they didn't know what that flag stood for, but they know black people didn't like it. You know what I'm saying? But they ain't know all the history connected to it. So, but after, so that was back in when I was in high school. So that was in the 80s. So then since I come back to this area after the military since the 90s, we didn't see it no more. We didn't see as much of it. You might see a Confederate bumper sticker. But lately I've been seeing dirty beat up trucks driving down the road that I ain't never seen before with makeshift rigged up flagpoles flying that Confederate flag. The only purpose that you doing that is to send a message. What message you trying to send? And I tell you what, if you get out your truck and you run off at the mouth, you're gonna get a message in return. You're gonna get an answer. Cause I don't know what you trying to send. So just be careful of these people down here, man. I almost got kidnapped in Georgia, by the way. I don't know how far you live from Sardis, but when I was doing construction, we was putting in a bridge down there in Sardis, Georgia, and this is where the cotton fields at, and that ground was kind of like sandy. It's like sandy dirt or whatever. So we were putting in a bridge down there. And so I was on the road, and all the crew, it was only about 4 of us, me being the 4th person, the crew was like down in a gully to where they couldn't be seen by the road. And these 2 white boys in a beat up truck. I don't know what it is about these terrorists and beat up trucks, but they come past. They saw me, thought I was alone. They put on their brakes, started backing up. Then other guys who didn't even know they were there just happened to be coming up. They saw those guys and they took off. So they wasn't about to ask me for no directions. And that happened in Sardis, Georgia. And so just be careful.
I agree. Now, I'm going to tell you, Scotty, I understand exactly what you're talking about. But where I live at was founded by black people. And most of the people that live there are black people. Now, there's white people that live in that area. Don't get me wrong. There are white farmers. And I have seen the Confederate flag. And I've actually asked one person about the flag. And he said, well, you know, my papa was in the war. We were sons of the South. We don't mean to do no harm by it. But we ain't out here trying to start nothing. It's just this part of our heritage. I said, I can respect that. I said, well, the reason why I asked is because you seemed like you had a certain reference to it. I mean, you take it out you put it out during the day, and you take it back at night. But the more I talked to him, the more he definitely let me know, you know, it's part of our heritage, and we have respect for it. Because he talked about his daddy and his daddy's daddy in the Civil War and all that. But I mean, what's interesting about it is that I have to respect the fact.
No,
that
they have I don't respect that.
I want them to respect mine.
I don't respect that. The way we've been dealing with them is we don't talk to them. We don't say nothing to them. We don't ask them no questions or nothing like that, because that saying, they talking about that they heritage, the Ku Klux Klan was a direct result of made up of Confederate soldiers. And so the history of the terrorism and the Ku Klux Klan and then with the flags, that's how I can't. You a grown man, you obviously can handle yourself. You a Vietnam veteran and you made it back alive. So I'm just saying, be careful. They tell you that that's the cover story. That's always the cover story. That's my heritage and all that. Well, I respect the fact that you may want to, you want to have a cemetery and all of that, and I ain't going to desecrate no graves or nothing. I'm not going to do like y'all do Jewish cemeteries and go pushing over your grandpops or whoever headstone. But I don't want it in the public square. These monuments got to go. They got to go because of why they was put up, to send a message that, hey, white supremacy is the law of the land and ain't nothing you could do about it. They basically challenging you as a man, as a woman. Okay, so, again, you know, maybe it is some of them that it's all about heritage, but that heritage include is based on slavery and terrorism. So if one would say something to me, basically, I'd be like, F your grandpops, and that's just how I feel about it.
I can respect that, Scotty, but you have to understand that I'm new in the area. I'm still building relationships. Most of the black people I'm talking to, I'm talking to them before I even talk to them. Because literally, those are the people who are dominant in the area, one. And two, I wouldn't understand. I'm down here to build a business. I'd like to be able to expand that base so that I could bring my family in and we could go ahead and do what we do, because and the bottom line is we're going to run into each other. So I want them to know certain things about me off the top. One of them is I'm a nice guy. Just I don't take no crap. But if I don't break the ice, they may not break the ice, so they would never get a chance to know who anything about anybody. See what I'm saying? So, I mean, yeah, I'm being very cautious about this. But I'm also trying to establish myself as a feature that's going to be there for a period of time. And a lot of them down there, you know yourself, they are broke. Oh, they all broke. I'm saying, you people don't know what all broke is. You go to some of these places down here, and I mean, these people are dirt poor, literally.
And to feel good about themselves, they look down on people with black skin and non-white skin. And so that, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying, just be careful, because they'll smile in your face. They'll do business with you, too. Okay, but if a lynch party is called for that, you know, they, hey, don't put nothing past them. But you do got another call. We got, I think this is Thomas 347. Thomas, did you have a question for or comment for Brother Davis?
Peace. Thank you, Scotty. Peace, Brother Davis.
Peace.
Yeah, man, and I just want to say that they don't have to be from the South to have a lynch party. Hey, that's one of their trademarks. Now, I heard you talking about the South and how everyone talks. And when I go on vacation, you know, you generally used to go down for family reunion and things, that would always throw me off, you know, because coming from the North, if someone's talking to you, that's usually the setup. They're about to ask you for some money, you know, they're about to give you their sob story. So you're taught to, you know, ignore. Yeah, if you don't know them, someone try to talk to you in the street, walk away from them, you know, you're kind of taught differently. So that kind of threw me off. Everyone, hey, how are you? You know, and where you from? So that was interesting. You know, I just wanted to say the Confederate flag only flew for 5 or 6 years. That U.S. flag has flown for over 220 years. You know, all the atrocities, including slavery, was done under that USA flag. White people with pickup trucks, I've mentioned that on the Cal several times, that it's something they have an epiphany with these pickup trucks, and it's very intimidating, in my opinion, because, you know, it was another thing in the North, you don't see a lot of pickup trucks, you know, unless you're, only people with pickup trucks are generally contractors and things. But when you get to the white area, you know, it's like that's a standard vehicle for them, you know. And I see the flagpoles on them. They don't have the Confederate flag flying up here as much. It's generally whatever white country that their ancestors came from. But my thing about the statues as well, I just heard that mentioned. If they knock down all the statues tomorrow, we're still gonna have to use money with slave masters on it, which to me, they need to change the money too. All the bills, all the paper money, has slave masters on it, and except for Alexander Hamilton, but he married a woman whose father was the largest plantation owner in Rhode Island, and Abraham Lincoln's wife's father was one of the largest slave owners in, I believe, Kentucky. So they married into slave owners, meaning they married rich. As far as the seeds, George Washington Carver is the person who built that all-him car. Let's give the ancestor his respects. He built it, not Henry Ford. He built it for Henry Ford. Henry Ford did pay him, I believe. He also invented the assembly line for Henry Ford. They have a seed bank in Scandinavia, right above, right below the North Pole. It's called the... I pulled it up because it's Svald. I don't know how they pronounce it. S-V-A-L-D-A-R-D. Global Seed Vault. This is a huge seed vault. I mean, it's like a airplane wing size, you know, hangar size. And it has, it's set up like a warehouse. It's very interesting. If you could look into it. But these people in Monsanto and Bill Gates have invested billions into getting all of the real seeds and putting them in this vault that no one else can't enter, but flooding the world with these fake seeds instead. So they're eating good, I'm sure. But look into that seed vault. That's where all the seeds of every plant, every tree, every food that you can eat, anything that grows naturally, the original seeds are there. And however, we're getting all the fake seeds. And were you talking about the bees, sir?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I think bees are interesting because I've been once again, your wife got me studying this flat Earth thing. So I was looking up the bees because I think our ancestors studied them because, you know, just looking at how they live in their living environment. You know, bees live in a six-dimensional space, those hexagrams, and you know, I think our ancestors studied them because they're not from this dimension. You know, they come from another dimension in space. And I see a lot of bees have disappeared. And a lot of people are saying that they went back home. They can reappear. I've heard as well, like they'll just pop up. Even if they have left for some time. So I think that's why our great ancestors were spent a lot of time studying them and drew a lot about them in their art on the walls. And I'll mute my line. Thank you, man.
I got a question, Brother Davis, for Thomas before he mutes himself. Thomas, John Sims, who is an artist who has been writing about Confederate monuments and yeah, we know about that brand of USA Inc. and all the atrocities, but like he said, though, John Sims put the question out there that if you can't remove the racism, white supremacy that you can see, he talking about monuments, physical things that represent that, and you know, if you can't remove those, what makes you think that you can remove the hidden racism, which we call, I would say, institutional racism, that these ghost skins are, to use the FBI term for them, that these ghost skins who are operating in these positions of power. So that's what I, you know, usually respond with, because I'm not saying it's you, but other people have said something about us people in the South who don't want to pay for these symbols that are put in strategic locations so that they're thrown up in our faces and it's saying, and we making you pay for it. So we're not saying removing a monument is a step in a process. Again, it's like removing bricks from a wall. So, but John Sims, check out his track, Burn or Bury. It's on YouTube. It's a audio visual. He like an audio visual artist and what have you, but that makes sense to me. If you can't remove the things that you do see, then you don't have a chance in hell of removing the hidden things. You can't get to them because you can't demonstrate that you got enough unity and power to remove what you can see. We got a call. Go ahead.
I agree with you, Scotty. Up here we have our statues as well that indicate. I know J. Marion Sims' statue is.
You got Rikers Island. You got Rikers Island. Named after.
We have the. It's just more refined, the racism.
Right.
But it's just as racist, bro. However, I tend to take to the thing that I don't really care about white people, and I don't really care about what they think. I care about black people. And I think that the way that black people function without caring or knowing that this system of racism, white supremacy exists, that those monuments should stay up. And in fact, we should be petitioning to put a sign in front of them to let everyone know exactly who that person is and what they did. So this way it's no confusion. Because if they want to keep their statues up to show that they're racist, then we need to point out to all our people that look at these people. They fought for this statue to stay up, and look at what this person did. And let's do it that way. I personally...
No, because then I'm conceding
staying
to
up,
no.
This is my own personal opinion.
I understand
that. It's not going to change these white people at all. We need to change black people's attitude toward white people. We're not going to do nothing ever to change their attitude toward us. And if you take down all those statues, that'll just allow them to practice more confusion. All these people that's taking these statues down, black people think are on their side, like Antifa, a very racist organization. Other organizations that are fighting for black people, they're fighting for their own thing using our name. They're not really fighting for us. So let's keep these things up so everyone knows exactly.
Well, I strongly disagree with that. And I'm keep stating that. I disagree with that because I don't care what white people think, and I don't need a statue to tell me something is racist. Yeah, if they want to keep them up, let them put them on their front lawn and their private property, because I'm going to exercise my domain, okay? So that's how I feel about it. I'm not for passive resistance, because that's not resistance at all. And again, let's not be ignorant and think that these white people don't know who these people are, because they know better than black people know. So if we want to read about them, that's what we got books for. Right? And we say you want to hide something from somebody, put it in a book. Now, I don't particularly buy into that racist stereotype, but that's what you got books for. And I'm not going to I find it to be an indignity and a challenge of my manhood, and I would be a poor example to my grandsons to allow these people to force me to pay for something and to stand for these symbols of terrorism. Because symbols are how they power, right? That's why a lot of the ancestors were so into symbology, and a lot of our people are still into symbology, because there's power behind that symbology. But then on the military side, okay, if you're trying to recruit people to a cause, you start with little things. You can't start a revolution with some people who's trained and ready to overthrow the system, because if you sit around waiting on white people to end it, then you'll be sitting around an eternity. So if you want to recruit people to end, I'm talking about black people. I'm talking about non-white people, which are the majority in this world. If you want to recruit them, then you start with the little things. If I can't recruit you to sign a petition or make a phone call or show up to a city council meeting and tell these white people that these are coming down. We're not asking you. We're telling you. Okay? We're telling you they coming down. If I can't get you to do that, I can't get you to come and train on my property with whatever weapons we training on and start a militia that's part of a nationwide network of militia to even be prepared. Not that we're going to attack anybody, to be prepared for all this stuff when people say they're going to come genocide us. They're going to kill all black people. So go run into Africa, South America, and all these other places. That's why I'm so strong on this issue. Not trying to see no ground to these racists. And maybe that's just the soldier.
Okay, okay.
That's just the soldier.
Okay, Hold on. Before we go any further, coming up on the last break, let's get the last break in. And look, let me say something very clear. Well, everybody's on this call, with an opinion that is constructive. So let's agree that we ain't all going to agree on the same thing, but because we're having open dialogue, we can come to some conclusions. So after this break, we're going to come back and we're going to focus on the legislative executive order that was brought up from the 1960s and reactivated today, dealing with blacks that extremely dress blacks that make who appear to be race or terrorist based, according to white people. So we're going to come to the break. We'll be right back. This is Brother Davis on a Wise Way.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Brother Davidson, we are back. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who do not know it, FBI had a file in which they literally had an executive order based on controlling black groups in the 60s. Literally, this is how they defeated the. They used this executive order to infiltrate a number of different organizations, and some of those organizations you know already, the Black Panther Party. The struggle was based on the power that was given through this executive order. How about the Africa movement in Philadelphia? Remember what happened to them? Because basically, the power this order gave government officials. Your local policeman, the right to literally come into people's homes and kill them. And that's what happened to a number of them. I'm just being blatant because at this phase of the game...
Permission, Brother
David. You don't know.
I would say not giving them the right because no man can give me my rights, as Dave often says, but they gave law enforcement permission to go murder people. That's basically what they did. Doesn't make it legal, doesn't make it legit, and it didn't give them a right to engage in terrorism and kill people, but the government gave these terrorists who infiltrated these police departments permission to kill. And I want to apologize for my passion on that issue, but I'm very passionate about that issue. I wasn't directing that personally towards Thomas, but I was just directing that towards the universe because that has been coming at me quite often. All right, so that wasn't nothing personal, but I do speak with passion, and it may come across as anger. I'm angry at the racist practicing slavery. Brother Davis?
I receive that, brother. I'm going to tell you something. I receive that, and believe me, I understand your passion. Because many of us, even though we may not have thought about it on the level, have shared that passion to some degree. But let's get back to the point of issue, and the reason why I'm pointing this out is because now, in these times, we are literally being targeted on a greater scale. This literally magnifies the target that's already on black men and women. So any organization that you may be in, and see, they don't look at the purpose of the organization, because if they would have looked at the purpose of the organization, they would have found out the Black Panther Party was doing more good, and a lot of their ideas have been incorporated by the government that is in power today in reference to how they were taking care of their people, the children, the programs they had. They had the Feed the Children program. United States government incorporated that program. Oh, they don't tell you that. But yes, that's what they did. They incorporated the Feed the Children program, and they targeted those black men and women who had enough insight, wisdom, and understanding to say, you know what? since you ain't doing it, we'll do it ourselves. That's all it came down to. And the sad part about it is that even to this day, there are a lot of black people who are sitting back saying, oh yeah, I remember when, but they were literally, because of their lack of participation, complicit. Now, they don't want to tell you that, no, because truth is a powerful tool. But they were complicit because in reality, there was enough unity in the community back then for that change to be permanent. You hear me? That change that was being initiated by the Black Panther Party, which was doing so much good for the community, that should have been a permanent staple in every community. But there was so much inconsistency. And a lot of that had to do with the transition from the so-called civil rights movement. Why do I say the so-called civil rights movement? Because although there was a civil rights movement, we didn't benefit. Why? Because we didn't, nobody knew civil. Who is civil? See, civil rights was given to us as a title. But when you get down to it, they changed the whole dynamic. That's why Brother Martin Luther King wrote in one of his last speeches. Literally, he wrote that he's taken his people, he's led his people into a house that is a burning house. He was saying that he knew at that point that literally what he thought was one thing, another thing was going on. He had to wake up people and take control and make the things happen that we need to happen. And don't take my word for it, because see, all they want you to hear is that I have a dream. You know why? Because they want you to keep dreaming. But when you do your due diligence, you're going to find out that Martin Luther King had a wake-up call on him, and Brother Malcolm X was starting to coordinate how they were going to deal or how they were going to make some amends in reference to what Martin Luther King had started. But you see, when it came to those powers that be, they didn't even want to hear about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King get together. So there's a lot of things involved in that dynamic, and one of the main tools that they used to disrupt what was going on with the Black Panther Party was this so-called extremist identity. And they only used that as a way to be able to go and do some things that they had no business doing. Because remember, for those of you who don't know it, that's one of the reasons why Huey P. Newton's destruction came to an end. See, in California, they were carrying arms openly. Reagan didn't realize that California gave him that right. When he did, he changed that law immediately. But I'm trying to get you to understand the importance of this and the role it's going to play in society today. Because guess what? They don't care how we perceive what they're doing. Let me make that very clear to you. So we have to be the ones to make a decision. And our decision has to be in our best interest. And our best interest is to make sure that we don't become victimized by executive order that was designed for our victimization. I don't think I could be any clearer. So the phones are open. If you guys want to call in, give your opinions, also state about the history, about the letter that you know, all of that's good. Because we're coming up on the last part of the show. And I definitely wanted this to be a part of the open discussion that we have in our workplaces or amongst our brothers and sisters. Now, why I say that? Because literally, this affects us all, and we cannot take it lightly. This is Brother Davis coming at you. Pick up your phones. Give me a call. You know it's on my mind. Let me know it's on yours. Because guess what? By the end of this show, you're not only going to realize what you can do, you're going to realize what you have the potential to do. But we have the potential to make some changes. We just have to take the step to initiate it. We have to talk about these things. It's like this conversation tonight. We have to talk about them so we can openly discuss. We need to find out who has a resource and who doesn't have a resource. Perfect example, as far as those statues are Southern. Listen, you want to put them in a museum, you pay for them. And when you want to go see them, you can go out to right away. You want to take your kids, they're still available to you. Do I think it is important that our children understand who the players were? No, I don't. All they need to do is understand the history of these people. Because I'm going to tell you something. Bring to the end of the show.
Yes, sir, Brother Davis. I was just sitting here. This was Hoover's FBI you're talking about now, and they're instituting his program at COINTELPRO. This is what Hoover actually did. He regularly planted false and libelous stories about radical leaders in the media. He forged signatures on correspondence and public documents, published and distributed bogus leaflets in the names of target groups, made anonymous telephone calls, inflammatory calls to important individuals claiming to be the leaders of the targeted groups, seeking social or radical justice, advertising meetings of various groups, publishing incorrect dates and times, posting as members of radical or civil rights groups, set up phony cells in order to get information on the kinds of individuals attracted to such organizations, made false arrests in order to establish criminal records for the leaders and members of targeted groups, gave prejury testimony and provided fabricated evidence in court resulting in wrongful convictions in order to frighten some targeted groups, especially Black Puerto Rican and Native American activists. FBI agents and police officers threatened the physical violence, conducted break-ins and destruction of groups. Headquarters administered vicious beatings. Early in 1971, the Citizens Committee to investigate the FBI accomplished the removal of secret files from the FBI office in Medea, Pennsylvania, and released them to the press. The FBI Domestic Core Intelligence Program, COINTELPRO, was exposed in that same year, Pentagon Papers. The above top secret government files on the Vietnam War were brought into the light of the public security. A number of FBI agents began to resign from the Bureau and reveal additional distasteful details of COINTELPRO. High-ranking government officials were made uncomfortably aware that the FBI had employed dirty tricks on American citizens solely because they espoused anti-war views or conducted marches and sit-ins for the social and racial justice. The organized attacks on individuals' rights, reputations, lives were denounced as acts of official terrorism. Senate and House committees conducted rigorous and extensive inquiries into the methods of government intelligence gathering and covert activities. These hearings reveal far-reaching illegal programs involving the FBI, CIA, U.S. intelligence agents, the White House, the Attorney General, and the state and local enforcement against groups of citizens who oppose domestic and foreign policies. Although the exposure of COINTELPRO brought about a period of temporary reform of government abuses in the 70s, government secrecy has been restored. The Freedom of Information Act that was so helpful in uncovering such programs as COINTELPRO was basically eliminated through administrative, judicial, and legislative actions taken under the Reagan administration. Civil rights attorneys warned that many of the covert illegal activities conducted under the COINTELPRO were legalized by Executive Order 12333 on December 4th, 1981. And chillingly, that which was legalized is probably still being performed. So COINTELPRO never went away, was always in effect. I just wanted to share that with you, man. That's all I had to say.
There's no misunderstanding about the power of this document. If you look at the result, you ask yourself with Fred Hampton. Fred Hampton was a powerful. Look at Bobby Seale. He's still incarcerated. They literally changed the lives of our brothers and sisters based on a piece of paper that was crap from the very beginning. Who had no truth in it. Now, you want a piece of paper that has truth in it? Let me give you some truth here. The Ku Klux Klan is the most terrorist group in American history, but yet they call them a social organization. What I call them is a domestic white terrorist organization, and that's how they should be labeled in my eyes. So
that's what they are. That's what they are. You got to call, Brother Davis. We have about 10 minutes left as we got New Abolitionist Radio. But you got a producer and host from New Abolitionist Radio who wanted to make a comment.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get the call and then come right back to them. Can we do that?
No, I'm saying that Max wants to comment on your program.
Okay, not a problem. Okay, is there any... Give us a call then, please.
Peace, brothers. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, brother.
It's good to be here as usual, and always good to hear you guys talking, hashing things out, explaining, using your wisdom. I would just like to comment on some of the things that were said earlier. I know we have a limited amount of time, so I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. Like yourself, I'm a believer that we can work these things out if we just talk about them. You know, talk isn't as cheap as people like to think it is. And as a spoken word poet with multiple awards, I can attest to that. It does make change.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't know it was you, man. All right.
Yes, sir.
Come on with it, man.
So yeah, as a spoken word poet who has made change with my words, I know that it makes a difference. And I'll be leaving South Carolina very soon. After 17 years of living here in the heart of the South, right in the, at the Capitol under the Confederate flag every day. And when I leave here, I can leave knowing two things for sure. One, that flag ain't there no more. And I was there to make sure that it came down. I was part of the, taking it down, and many generations fought to see that happen. I was there next to Nikki Finney and got her first emotions on it. She felt the same way that I did. So the tribal reign, living under the shadow of that terror, had to end, and we were proud that we helped to take the enemy's flag down from his Capitol building. That means something, and we need to keep doing things like that. And the other thing is, I can also say that here in South Carolina, we've had more people run for political office on an abolitionist platform than in any other state in the Union. Senator, congressman, mayor, city council, and that again comes from talking, because we talked about these things and the people heard us, it made changes in their minds, and they in turn turned that into reality. Right now we have someone running for Congress here in South Carolina under an abolitionist platform, and we've had one right before that. So those two things I can walk away from South Carolina knowing are going to happen. And I would like to say finally that I do agree with Brother Thomas in regards to the money. Eventually, we're going to have to look at that money and start to understand what it's about, what's on it, whose faces is on it, whose money is it. And we'll have to understand that as long as we're using their money, which ain't even gold or silver, it's just paper, as long as we're using that, they have us in their control.
Absolutely right, brother. And I'd say I couldn't have been done any better than the poet could do it. Listen, we're coming up on the end of the show. I want to show my appreciation for everybody involved in tonight's show. We must understand that in every caveat in life, there's going to be a way to break it open. That means there's going to be two sides, two perspectives on how this caveat must be approached. But we can find solutions. But we have to use the tools that are available to us. We may not like the tool all the time. We may have to manipulate the tool to be more comfortable in our use, but we can make a difference. This is Brother Davis on a Wise Wednesday. I want to thank everybody who called the show. I want to thank Brother Max Parkins. I tell you, I wish me and you could have met both guys in the South, but I'm going to make sure it happens somewhere around Ohio. I want to thank Brother Scotty. I want to thank everybody that called in, because what makes Wednesday wise is the participation of the people that are involved, bringing different avenues of thought into one venue so that we can have open discussion. Once again, it's Brother Davis on a Wise Wednesday. I want to say thank you very much, Scotty. I appreciate what you're doing. Give my best to Dave and everybody who participated. Please join me next Wednesday for another Wise Wednesday with Brother Davis. Back to you, Scotty.
All right, thank you, Brother Davis, as we get ready to close out the Tando Radio Show. Coming up at the top of the hour is the award-winning broadcast of New Abolitionist Radio, a weekly program talking about 21st century slavery and human trafficking, not the, of the illegal variety, but has been legalized and constitutionalized by the United States of America Incorporated. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We're going to play some music. And again, stay tuned for New Abolitionist Radio.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at
to avoid at all costs.
With slicing.
Gaddafi didn't get